Welcome. I see a lot of familiar and friendly faces, and I see some unfamiliar and friendly faces. I'm going to dedicate tonight's talk to our former abbot and my teacher, Catherine Thanis, Sobun Catherine Thanis Roshi. We commemorated a year from her death 2 days ago. And this brought up a lot of things for me in remembering. And so it was really hard for me to put this together in a coherent way. I felt really emotional, and maybe you'll get a sense of that. The first thing I'm going to read several things, small excerpts from Suzuki Roshi, who was our teacher's teacher. And they're very brief excerpts that are describing things. And what I'm going to talk about mainly is how I embody our practice and what I do in my everyday life that is practice. And most of us in Zen practice think of the cushion as our practice, that we spend a great deal of time on the cushion. We spend a great deal of time looking at our mind and trying to let go of that. But then there's the practice of our everyday life, of our moment-to-moment life. And this is, unlike a monastic practice that is contained and that is highly devotional, in a lay practice, it is also highly devotional. But it's where the rubber meets the road, and it's the everyday, of the moment to moment that we experience, and that sometimes we understand and sometimes we are clueless about. And so, in thinking about practice in the everyday sense of a lay practitioner like myself, I reflect upon my life in relationship with our family, in relationship with the Sangha, in relationship with my colleagues. I was formerly and am still a teacher. I retired from teaching actually in 2006, but I'm still teaching. So I'm going to try to weave in what my life is like and how practice appears in my life in the moment to moment, in the sometimes mundane, in the sometimes profound. And a lot of you, many of you experienced the memorial service at Tassajara. And I'm going to start this talk with a poem that my wife Nanette wrote. And instead of giving her lots of accolades, I'll let her words speak to that. And I'm so glad you're here, Charlie. I'm glad everybody's here. Catherine, by Nanette Overly. When I flicked the scoop of ashes from the worn wooden spoon, they drifted, then sifted down, and the sage below us burst into flame, full of vibrant life that couldn't be contained. We were scooping the ashes from a plastic bag, passing it hand to hand, down the slope, with awe and bewilderment. At the end of the line, Charlie shook out the bag. The empty plastic bag waved in the wind like a weary flag. There was an odd, unexpected misty rain that day. This was the body of my teacher. You hardly noticed the rain, really. But by the time we had wound our way down from the memorial site, water was beating on my hair, and my rakusu hung damp, soaked through, weighty with her teaching. Thank you, Nanette. So I'm going to describe the definition of a Roshi. Catherine, a Roshi, is a person who has actualized that perfect freedom, which is the potentiality for all human beings. The flow of their consciousness is not the fixed, repetitive patterns of our usual self-centered consciousness, but rather rises spontaneously and naturally from the actual circumstances of the present. The result of this in terms of the quality of her life are extraordinary. Buoyancy, vigor, simplicity, humanity, serenity, humility, joyousness, and deep compassion. Who, being satisfied, testifies to what it means to live in the present, just meeting a personality so developed can be enough to change another's whole way of life. But in the end, it's not the extraordinariness of the teacher that perplexes, intrigues, and deepens the student. It is the teacher's utter ordinariness. Because she is just herself, she is a mirror for her students. With her, we feel our own strength and shortcomings without a sense of praise or criticism. In her presence, we glimpse our own true nature, our Buddha nature. Catherine taught a lot, not through intellectual understanding, but she was very much a body teacher. And I remember really early on when we first came to Zen Center, some of her teachings that were about paying attention moment to moment. She suggested that everything we did, doing the dishes at home, that we were really present with doing the dishes. That in engaging with other people, we were present with the other people that we engaged with. And I couldn't help for myself to reflect in my career how important those things were. How in being a teacher with troubled alternative high school students who had a lot of baggage, how meeting them in that moment and really being present for them and with them, how much this teaching was a part of my life before I came to Zen Center. And I was kind of oblivious to that, other than just doing my job and being present. I thought that that was really important. And listening very intently to my students, I thought that was very important, because a lot of them hadn't been listened to very much in their life. And so Catherine's teaching made sense. It was a way of living. And in sitting on the cushion for years, I could see more and more my pitfalls, my mistakes, my shortcomings, And really slowly I started learning to let some of that stuff go. And I still have plenty of shortcomings. And I'm still learning to let stuff go. This little excerpt is from Suzuki Roshi on the Genzo Koan. The secret of all teaching of Buddhism is how we live in each moment. How to obtain absolute freedom moment after moment. This is the theme of the Genzo Koan. Moment after moment we exist in interdependency with past and future and all existence. In short, you practice Zazen, concentrating on your breathing, moment after moment. You will be keeping the precepts, helping yourself and helping others, and attaining liberation. We do not aim or emphasize some particular state of mind or some particular teaching, even though it is a perfect and profound teaching. We do not emphasize the teaching only. Rather, we emphasize how we understand and how we bring the truth into practice. This practice does not mean some particular practice only. When we say Zen, Zen includes all activity in our life. And I really love how simply that is stated and how profound it is at the same time. And what a repetitious teaching that we sometimes need to learn and learn again and learn again and learn again. At least for me. And this is from Suzuki Roshi's first book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. And it's about right understanding. The most important things in our practice are our physical posture and our way of breathing. We are not so concerned about a deep understanding of Buddhism. As a philosophy, Buddhism is a very deep, wide, and firm system of thought. But Zen is not concerned about philosophical understanding. We emphasize practice. We should understand why our physical posture and breathing exercise are so important. Instead of having a deep understanding of the teaching, we need a strong confidence in our teaching, which says that originally we have Buddha nature. Our practice is based on this faith. So I've alluded to my work, and I'm going to elaborate a little bit. I've been really fortunate both to be a high school teacher, to be able to teach in the fine arts, to have relationship both with my colleagues and my students. It's been this ongoing relationship. It's still going. Now I've got relationship with all of you right now. And so I'm really grateful for the work I've been able to do. And I didn't always feel confident, and I didn't always feel that I was doing everything that I could possibly do for my students. But I'm still really grateful for that experience that I had. I taught for over 32 years. And then there's the other relationship of family. Nanette and I raised a blended family of five children. And now we have six grandchildren. the youngest of which we volunteered to watch every Tuesday from about 7:30 in the morning till 5 in the evening. So her mom, who just went back to work yesterday was our first day to babysit all day. Boy, was that exciting. So I look at that little bodhisattva, and all you have to do is smile at her, and she smiles right back at you. And it's the mirror. It is so great. So I see back in our raising of children together that we've made mistakes, that we've always done our best, that we could never predict which way anyone was going, and they frequently went astray, especially a couple of them. Sometimes it was really troubling, and sometimes we just felt like, what else can we do to make it better? One of our middle boys spent several years in prison. And when he got out of prison, we went to Colorado to pick him up and to get him settled into a place and to get him a phone, because he had to report in every morning at 7 in the morning or some absurd time. When you're doing Zazen, that's not an absurd time. That's kind of late. But for most 20 and 30-year-olds, I think it's early. Well, I think we listened to him for 2 days straight without saying very many words ourselves. We just listened, and we caught up on his story and his experience. And it was just heart-wrenching. And in my life, I experienced many, many times where I said to myself, I am so grateful I'm not him. I couldn't be him. And this is a boy that, you know, from the get-go, he was an adopted boy, and he was malnourished when Nanette and her first husband adopted him. And he's had a rough road his whole life. He still has a rough road, but he's doing a lot better. I talk to him almost every day. He's still in Colorado, but he calls incessantly. And usually I'm happy to pick up the phone. Usually I'm very happy to listen to him and to talk to him and to sometimes give him advice, not very often. But I'm grateful for him. He's taught me a lot. And I remember for the first many years that Nanette and I were together, I always wondered, what am I doing wrong? Why isn't this kid a little bit nicer than he is? Why does he lie to your face and you always believe him? So it took me a really long time to understand that it wasn't anything I was doing or not doing. It had very little to do with me. It had everything to do with him. It had everything to do with his past. It had everything to do with the karma that he brought forward from the very beginning of his life. And that was so hard for me to understand and to even accept. I wanted to be responsible for him. I wanted to somehow fix him. You know, I wanted his life to be better. But that was not my charge. That wasn't what I was here for. And I'm still here for him, and I support him wholeheartedly, and I love him. And he's still a wacko, but I really love him. There's a goodness inside there that's there. And sometimes it's really hard to see. I could go on and on about the stories of our kids, because boy, there's some stories. But Alex has been the one that was the hardest and the most difficult to to help me understand myself and my place with Him. So I really cling to kind of that relationship and its ongoing development. And I'm grateful for Him being my teacher. Him showing me things that I just couldn't understand and couldn't feel the same way He did. So in my practice, I've been a son, a father, a brother, an uncle, a husband, a teacher, a student, a farmer, an artist, a cook. I'm really grateful for how all these things have developed me in different ways. I'm grateful for what it brings to Zen Center. That I can be a full participant. At Zen Center, I've had a lot of roles too. I think when we first showed up, we were so enthusiastic that they put you to work right away. As soon as they notice that you're coming almost every day, it's all over for you. So if you're not Doan or Jiko or playing the Makugyo, setting the pace of the chant with the drum and harmonizing with all the other voices, then there's cooking with Global Sangha. I've done that for about 5 years now, a little over 5 years. Every Friday, we cook a large soup for the Homeless Garden Project and a large soup for the River Street Shelter and a large pot of brown rice, usually, for the garden. And we take it to the garden and then we cook again there with their vegetables. And we serve anywhere from 15 to 45 people. And they're always gracious. And they're always grateful. And when I first started that practice, I thought, oh, this is a good way to give up my time. This is dana. This is giving. This is taking my time and giving whatever I can to somebody that's maybe less fortunate than I am. But right after starting that project with Patrick, I found out that it wasn't just giving. It was also receiving. And we would almost always receive more than we would give. We would cook all morning, and we would serve lunch at lunchtime, and the gratitude was very, very evident. And the diversity of people, I had a real set idea when I first showed up there that homeless people were down and out because of drug addiction and alcoholism. I met several professional people who had lost their job, then lost their home, and then they were on the street. And so my ideas, and I've always got ideas, just like you, my idea had been this fixed idea that the people we were serving were a certain kind of people. And boy, that shifted right away and opened my eyes to the fact that I could be in the same place they are easily, given circumstances that are beyond our control. And so my appreciation grew with every time I would go. And fortunately, recently, Patrick and I talked about how to make this job more sustainable, because it was really hard to make it every Friday, every Friday, every Friday after 5 years. It was not always easy to show up. And so Patrick generated a sign-up sheet and we started inviting people in to come and cook with us. And that's been a wonderful experience because we're sharing the wealth of the experience of giving. We're sharing the intimacy of cooking together and practicing together and putting our practice to service and to use in our community and we're helping people. And every time either a new face shows up or somebody that has been coming to Zen Center for a little while and they hear the announcement or they see the sign-up sheet and they sign up, it's just this great feeling that I'm being supported. This giving and receiving, this full circle, is a continuum. And it's a wonderful thing. And I'm grateful for everybody that shows up. They not only relieve my burden to some degree, but we share in the joy of giving. And it's just a wonderful thing. This is also from Suzuki Roshi, and it's called The Quality of Being. The purpose of Zazen, so this is the other side of our practice on the cushion. The purpose of Zazen is to attain the freedom of our being, physically and mentally. According to Dogen Zenji, every existence is a flashing into the vast phenomenal world. Each existence is another expression of the quality of being itself. I often see many stars early in the morning. The stars are nothing but the light which has traveled a great speed many miles from the heavenly bodies. But for me, the stars are not speedy beings, but calm, steady, and peaceful beings. We say, in calmness, there should be activity. In activity should be calmness. Actually, they are the same thing. To say calmness or to say activity is just to express two different interpretations of one fact. There is harmony in our activity, and where there is harmony, there is calmness. This harmony is a quality of being. But the quality of being is also nothing but its speedy activity. When we sit, we feel very calm and serene, but actually we do not know what kind of activity is going on inside our being. There is complete harmony in the activity of our physical system, so we feel the calmness in it. Even if we do not feel it, the quality is there. So for us, there is no need to be bothered by calmness or activity, stillness or movement. When you do something, if you fix your mind on the activity with some confidence, the quality of your state of mind is the activity itself. When you are concentrated on the quality of your being, you are prepared for the activity. Movement is nothing but the quality of our being. When we do Zazen, the quality of our calm, steady, serene sitting is the quality of the immense activity of being itself. I was so glad to pick this book up again. It's been years since I read it. And it has all these wonderful little jewels in it that need to come back to us, that I need to be reminded about, that I need to reflect on some more. So I'm sensing this calmness in my activity. When I go cook, there's the activity, and then there's the calmness within that activity. Recently we had a session that I wasn't able to be at the entire time, but I was fortunate enough to be the tenzo, the cook, for a day. And that practice, again, is this very thing, the calmness in your activity. the activity in your calmness. And again, it's so wonderful to be reminded of that, to look deeper into that practice. You're trying to serve healthy food to healthy people, to keep them steady in their sitting, to keep their minds however their minds will be. But it's that activity and the calmness within that activity that we notice after we've done it a while. I remember the first time I was Tenzo, it looked like all activity to me. I don't think I had a calm bone in my body. I was pretty active and nervous, and I refused to come in and sit very much because I had to be preparing the next thing, or cleaning the counters, or doing the dishes. And so I've noticed my evolution in that too, that the activity has become calm. And that kind of brings forward our nature. That we can rest in that activity. In preparing this talk, there was a lot of calm at first. And then it started being activity and I lost my calm. And right up to the last moment, I was losing my calm. And then as I stepped into the Zendo, my calm came back. And it felt really good to just be here, to just share this time with you, to just be present with you, to give you my expression of how my life has unfolded and how the teachings have been interwoven even before coming to Zen Center. Which I find simply amazing. That I notice now in my age, in retrospect, how in my life there has been this calm abiding frequently. And I never understood it. And when I started learning about moment to moment, just doing the next thing, and Catherine's teaching of saying yes, that she learned from her teacher. She said to Suzuki Roshi, "In my life there's always a yes and a no. What do I do about that?" And he said, "Follow the yes." And she passed that on to me. And I say yes maybe more than I need to. But it has served me well. It has served the Sangha well. And I'm just really grateful that I'm able to do that. Because who knows how long we'll be able to do that. And so I'm really grateful as time goes on that practice is the practice. That it is moment to moment. That it's everyone I meet. And I used to always meet Catherine at the farmer's market on Wednesday downtown. I just loved it. There she'd be cruising along with her shopping bag. And we'd always stop and talk. And we'd laugh. And we'd talk about the food. We'd talk about practice. A lot of you know that before Catherine passed, you know, she would go to Monterey Zen Center once a month. And the folks at Monterey were very concerned about her not driving. They thought, she's getting up in age and she shouldn't be driving. So they asked for a volunteer to take her there, and I had the time and I had the inclination, and I thought it was a blessing to spend time with her. And it just cracked me up every time I would get there. Every single time, I would be thanked up and down. I would receive this great gratitude. And it seemed to me that nobody understood that it was just a gift for me. that I was doing this for her and I was doing this for them, but I was also doing this for me, because it was always a wonderful time to drive and talk, even though on every trip Catherine would have to look at me and say, "Chuck, speak more softly." I have hearing aids in my ears right now that belong to Catherine. Catherine gave me the gift of hearing, and she gave the same thing to Jeffrey. And I used to think Jeffrey's hearing was really terrible until I saw both of our charts on these computers side by side. They were identical. It was kind of scary, because always in Dharma talks, I would see Jeffrey leaning forward and holding his ear so he could amplify sound without a hearing aid a little bit. And I always thought, poor Jeffrey, his hearing is so bad. And then I saw those charts and I had to laugh. I just thought that was hilarious that he and I have about the same hearing deficit. And these hearing aids have really been a blessing. I don't wear them most of the time. But when I go to a board meeting, or when I come to a Dharma talk, when I really need to hear, it's a blessing. It's really wonderful. And I'm so grateful. I had no idea it was coming my way. It was well after Catherine passed that we got this message that there was two sets of hearing aids that were earmarked for Jeffrey and I. Catherine was really clear about our hearing deficit. I mean, she reminded me frequently, because I would get excited and I would really start talking loudly. And my wife had told me about this before too. But now it's a little bit different. I can speak more softly. I don't have to raise my voice either when I'm excited or when I want to hear myself or when I want to make sure others hear me. Because instead of blasting you right off the seat, I can speak at a more normal tone, thanks to Catherine. So I've had a lot of blessings here at Zen Center, and I'm really, really grateful to them. Do you have your watch with you? I'd like a time check.
7:20.
So that gives me 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Roughly?
Yeah.
Okay. One other thing I want to share about Catherine, and this was a period of intimacy that others in this room thankfully shared, and that was when Catherine was passing, we were in Sesshin. And so we would walk to Catherine's house during Sesshin. And we would sit with her, and we knew she was dying, and we would just sit and listen to her breathe. And I couldn't believe how intimate that was. And I mean, the room was full of people. Just full of people. And you could hear a pin drop. It was utterly silent except for her breathing. And so a lot of people marked that time as her final teaching was the breath. And we just appreciated it so much, just being with her. And I found it so unusual. I think the only similar time was in my own dad's passing, I wasn't there when he passed, but I remember going and seeing his body and having that realization that, and I actually verbalized it. I said, "That's not my dad. It was a shell. It was just this shell. And what he was, especially what he was to me, was completely gone. It wasn't there anymore. It was just the shell." And so that great teaching of impermanence was right there. And then it was real similar with Catherine. Going to the crematorium and weeping and just feeling like we were all a part of her. And I know that some people had a really rough road with her. I was really clear about that because a lot of people had told me. But Nanette and I came to practice so late in our life. Maybe Catherine had mellowed. You know, maybe her degree of compassion had changed. Whatever it was, we never had a cross word. We always had great respect for her and the teaching. And we always felt really fortunate to be here and for her to be our teacher, even though it was the latter part of her life. And then in listening to some of her early talks, I was just flabbergasted by the energy and the clarity in her teaching. And I regretted not having heard her teaching early on. And yet Nanette and I had been going to Tassajara for over 25 years, and we had seen the abbot and had no idea she lived in Santa Cruz until we showed up here eventually and started practicing with her. So her teaching for me has been profound, even though it was the latter part of her life and her energy wasn't the same. She still had a very sweet nature to me, and I was just so grateful for all the time we shared, no matter how it was, no matter if it was in discussion, at the farmer's market, on a drive to Monterey. It didn't matter. It was just consistently really, really warm and wonderful. And I'm really grateful for that experience that we've had. I would like to end with another poem. And I'm really fortunate that my wife is poetic and she reads a lot and studies a lot. And she shared this poem with me, and I'd like to share it with you. And a lot of you know Mary Oliver. She's such a prolific writer, and she touches the lives of so many people. She's such a beautiful writer. When I am among the trees, especially the willows and the honey locust, equally the beech, the oaks, and the pines, they give off such hints of gladness. I would almost say that they save me. And daily, I am so distant from the hope of myself, in which I have goodness and discernment, and never hurry through the world, but walk slowly and bow often. Around me the trees stir their leaves and call out, "Stay a while." The light flows from their branches and they call again, It's simple, they say. And you too have come into the world to do this, to go easy, to be fulfilled with light and to shine. Thank you very much for coming out today during the last period of Zazen. It was a rather sparse group. And I thought, oh, swell. I'll be talking to an unpacked house. And then a bunch of people showed up. And like I said, I was so happy to see you, Charlie, because you were mentioned in Nanette's poem. And I knew that those of you who went to the memorial could resonate with what she had to say. It was a beautiful, drizzly day. And it was a real interesting ceremony. And unlike the majority who went up to the Suzuki Roshi Memorial site up at the top of the ridge, right out of beautiful downtown Tassajara, I went with a smaller group to the river. And I had this very, very visceral experience of holding my teacher's ashes in my hand. And then immersing them in the clear water of Tassajara Creek. And I can't quite express what that felt like. But it just pierced me to my heart. Holding my teacher's ashes in my hand. The grainy quality of bone and marrow. And my teacher drifting into this new realm and spread, just like in the air, just like in the water, and so personal and so sweet. And I'm so grateful that I was able to go and be there and experience that firsthand. I've never experienced anything like that. It was really precious to me, those moments. And they were just moments. But they were so precious. They were so profound and not ordinary. And maybe ordinary. But I was so grateful and still am. Thank you.
Being marvelous, I vow to save them.